I'd like to put something on the board, so I'd like to ask that maybe you would sing a couple more verses of song. I was thinking about number 219, and before we sing, I'd like to say that I'm so thankful for the songs, the special songs we heard this morning. I want our lives to be able to touch someone for the Lord. Not just mine, but everyone here. And I believe the most beautiful song that there ever could be is a song of those that are redeemed. A life that's really been changed. And I'd like to talk to us this morning about something that needs to be different than the world around us. So I desire a sincere interest in your prayers, and maybe you could sing a couple verses at least of 219 while I put something on the board, please. Drawn some pictures of some bolts on the bulletin or on the chalkboard, and there's a few of you that I don't want you to answer, but I would like to ask this morning if anybody can tell me what that tells you about that fastener that I have on the board. Anybody know? The one in the middle and the one on the right tells us how hard that fastener is, but what does the one on the left over there tell you?
Left-hand thread.
That it's got left-handed threads. And what does not only the hardness, but these two, the center one and the far right one, what does it, how do you know what kind of tool to go for by just looking at that? Yeah, but it's a little bit more specific than that. Which one of these is metric? This one in the middle is always going to take a metric wrench. And the one over here is always going to be a fractional size. Now, the reason I put that up there, that's not my message, okay? But the reason I put that up there is because if you're going to work on machinery, you need to know some very basic, fundamental things. In other words, if you get a big enough impact wrench and you put it on this bolt over here, I've seen this happen, and you go to try to take it off and you're turning it to the left, you'll turn it probably. But you'll turn it maybe a turn or two, and then all of a sudden it'll break. It'll just break off. And you might do the second one, And then you'll go to one of your coworkers and say, all the bolts is breaking off on this thing I'm taking apart. And you go over there and look, and it's got an L in the end of the bolt. And you ask them, well, which way are you turning it? And they're turning it the wrong way. So it's very important to know the basics. And then if you can't find a wrench to fit this bolt in the middle, and all you're trying to fit it with is your 9/16 or your 3/4 or something like that, you're going to have great difficulty. So if you know these fundamentals, you're going to be ahead of the people that don't know these fundamentals. So what I have to share with you this morning is very fundamental. I'd like to start in the 5th chapter of Matthew. I'd like to begin reading in the first verse. He says, "And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying." We know this is the introduction to the Sermon on the Mount. We know that it says here, the writer, presumably Matthew's own words, he says, Jesus was observing the multitudes. And I'm assuming that multitudes would include the general populace. And he says, he went up into the mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. So if you were out amongst the general populace, and then it says that you went to a place that was more difficult to access, and the disciples came, I would think you would be narrowing down the crowd to those that was interested in really following Jesus. Is that a fair assumption? So he says that his disciples came unto him, and the second verse says, and he opened his mouth and he taught them. So the entire Sermon on the Mount is instructions that Jesus gave those that were intent on following him. And I would like to think this morning that all of us here are intent on following Christ. All right? So I'm just going to go forward on that kind of assumption that every one of you that's here this morning, you're not here just to see who you can see. I'm going to go on the assumption that you are here to learn better what Christ would ask out of us. All right? So now I'd like for us to go down to the 13th verse. And he says here, ye are the salt of the earth. Remember, he's giving his disciples, those that are intent on following him, instructions. He says, ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden underfoot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on the hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I'm certain that we're all familiar with these verses. The point of the salt losing its savor and the light being hid under a bushel. Do you know that that's the objective of the enemy in our world today, is to cause the salt to not be salty anymore and to cause the light to become dim. Have you ever noticed our more modern vehicles have went from a $10 seal beam to a $100 lamp assembly with a $30 bulb and all of this kind of stuff. And all of them that's more aerodynamic and all of that, you know, all of them are made out of plastic, and the UV rays from the sun causes that to deteriorate and they get hazy. And I can probably look around here just walk around and find somebody that has dim headlights. And it don't even have to be dark. I can look at it and tell it, you've got some dim headlights. And you can do some things to kind of help it, but it's really not, there's no real good fix without putting new ones in. And none of us like to drive with dim headlights, do we? Especially if it's foggy and rainy and cloudy and all of those things. In every one of those vehicles, that came on incrementally over a long period of time. If you bought it new, you didn't realize the day that it started getting dim. It just gradually got dimmer and dimmer until maybe you drove someone else's car, and when you turned the lights on, it was like, wow, this has got some real headlights on it. And you get back in yours, and it's like you have to, I feel apprehensive in driving to something that doesn't have good headlights, and it's a really dark night. So the point that we want to get a hold of today is something that will keep our headlights bright. We want our light to be a light to the world, not something that's going dim. I thought about bringing my little pocket flashlight that I carry around. I feel like I'm not hardly dressed when I go to work if I don't have my little pocket flashlight. And I use that thing constantly. And I don't realize when my batteries are getting weak either. And sometimes one of the boys will come over and they'll see me trying to see something with my little light, and they'll say, give me that thing. And they go put some new batteries in it, and then it gets really bright. But that's happened to all of us in our lives, is things happen and accumulate. Mindsets begin to be impacted and infiltrated by the forces of the enemy to the point that our light isn't as bright as it should be. It's not as bright as it would be with a clear lens. It's not as bright as it would be if it had full power to it. And sometimes we need to come to settings like this and have our lights adjusted. That's another thing that's kind of obsolete today is headlight adjust. I've got a tool to adjust headlights, by the way. But it only works on a lot of the older cars. It's used to aim the headlights so that they work properly. Now, this morning, my objective is to get to the point that I've got one main thing in mind, and I want to get there from a way that you understand. I don't want to be accusatory, but I want us to be very clear. I want us to gain understanding. The song says that we are learning. I'm learning. You're learning. And if we can learn something today and be very clear about it, then I believe we'll be more equipped to really be the salt and really be the light that this world desperately needs. I came from a home that my mother used salt very sparingly. And my wife came from a home, at least she is one that likes salt in seasoning her food. And so consequently, I hardly ever pick up a salt shaker because everything is plenty salty for me. But it's just been a change, you see. And some of you that are cooks can maybe tell me if you can keep salt long enough on the shelf, whether it actually loses its potential or not. I'm not getting into that, but I know that varying amounts of salt impact the essence of the flavor of the food we consume. So it's important for me today that we get a hold of the concept and the principle that we want our light and we want the flavor that the world gets a hold of when they sample our lives. They sample our lives by observing us, by being associated with us, by coming in contact with us, by hearing what we say, by seeing what we do. And when they sample that, we want them to get a hold of something that is that's real. That it's not. How do you help somebody if your flashlight batteries are dead, you see? You could have a light, you could have a flashlight, But if it don't work, how much good does it do? And we can have the scripture, and we can have a profession, but it needs to work. It really needs to have some essence to it. So I would like to go down and read some more in Matthew chapter 5. I'd like to go down to verse 27. It says, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Again, you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself." And I will stop right there. I read part of a verse I didn't intend to. The subject that I want to address is in verse 28. But it is surrounded by a context of the old law being brought to the New Testament dispensation by Christ's teaching. The old law in Exodus, the 20th chapter and the 14th verse, said plainly, one verse, one sentence, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." That was the law that God gave to Moses to give to the people. And if you want to read it, you can go to Deuteronomy, the 22nd chapter, and you can read the consequences for adultery under the old law. I would like to make just one comment about adultery in itself. If we look down here in verse 32, it says, "But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery." Now, that little phrase that's interjected in here that says, saving for the cause of fornication, has caused a lot of discussion to be mounted. A lot of discussion has been made over that phrase, and a lot of exceptions. And I would like to give you something to think about. Maybe you just write it down or something and think about it later, because this is not the focus of my burden this morning. But did you know that if someone has committed fornication, that you can't cause them to commit adultery? Did you hear what I said? It says that whosoever shall put his wife away his wife, we could leave that phrase out, it says, causeth her to commit adultery. That's a great responsibility. But the only... it's not an exception for you to divorce your wife. It's a realization that you didn't cause her to commit adultery because she's already done it. All right, you think about that. Okay. Everything I say this morning is gender bidirectional. You know what I mean by that? The scripture specifically uses gender terms here, but I believe that it goes both ways. And I appreciate it, at least for this morning's discussion, if you wouldn't try to argue with me, at least right now. I'd like for us to go back to this 28th verse. And he says, "But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." This is something that I believe, unfortunately, for many generations has been avoided because of not knowing how to tactfully address it in public, in a setting like this. It's also been avoided in the home front because of apprehensions, fears of introducing instead of actually doing what they would like to do as far as warning and informing. And I know that I stand a great chance this morning of being unpopular and maybe criticized, but I would ask that you would stick with me for a while this morning. It says here, "Whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." Bidirectional, if you will. Works the other way. It is not something that's lopsided, one-sided, or only fits one direction. It goes both ways. I put this illustration on the board so that we can understand there's some very core fundamentals. And if I presume, if you come to help me in my line of work, and I presume that you know what this means, and I turn you loose with my tools, I have all the way up to a 1-inch impact and a big air hose. And if you put that on something and turn it the wrong way, you're going to break it. So it would behoove me, no matter how much I think you know, and some of you, I think you know a lot about mechanical things. And if I picked one of you young men and said, "I'd like for you to come home with me and work with me for a couple months, I could use your help." And you came with me and I did not go over some fundamentals, I could get up, I could get in a sticky situation. Maybe I could tell you that every bolt on this component is metric, and then I find you trying to put a standard bolt in a metric hole and have to drill something out. And that, you know, that can be a lot of wasted time. So this morning, my purpose is, I'm not going to assume that you already know. I want to make something very clear today to where when you leave here, you don't have to ask yourself, "Well, I really wonder if something is right or wrong." Okay? So when he says here, "You have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery." We know what the law says. We know what Jesus' application of the law was. But he says here that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. In Hebrews, the 12th chapter, in the first verse, do we know what that says? Talks about a cloud of witnesses, remember? But it also says something else that I feel like is relative to our discussion this morning. Hebrews 12 and 1. It says, "Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." You know, the sin that does so easily beset the vast majority of mankind is what Jesus addressed in Matthew, the 5th chapter, and the 28th verse. When we begin to come to the threshold of adulthood, many times we become, it begins with an interest, it proceeds to a fascination, and it ends up in something that you are uncertain about at the least and feel convicted about at the most. All right? Every one of us that's sitting here today, if you're at that age or older, you've had to deal with it. Doesn't matter what your gender is, don't matter what your background is, you've had to deal with it. You've had to contend with the sin, and that's the right word, that would easily beset every one of us. And if we do not realize this is a fundamental principle of keeping our headlights bright and our salt savory, what we're going to do is we're going to kid ourselves, and we're going to get down the road and we're going to feel handicapped. How many of y'all have seen vehicles, trailers, trucks, going down the road with lug nuts missing? Ever seen that? Especially out on the farm. Now, maybe you can get by. If it had eight, you can get by with six or seven most of the time. But if you really put a load on it, all of them become important. And if you really start putting a load on a life, and I'm going to tell you, folks, we're facing a time in our world that it's imperative that we're able, with the help of the load lifter we heard about the other night, to be able to go to our full capacity. It's not a time to just cruise and float along. It's a time to be able to carry your full capacity. If you're equipped to be a three-quarter ton, then by all means, the Lord intends you to be able to haul your full capacity. All right? And if you got broken lug nuts because you have not overcome the sin that does so easily beset us, you won't be able to do it. And it's going to show up in our body. Oh, I'm not talking about this flesh. I'm talking about this body of people. It's going to be apparent in this body of people if we got broken lug nuts. I don't know. I haven't looked around. There may be some cars here that's got broken lug nuts. I don't know. That's not what I'm here for. I want us to realize that spiritually we need them all on there. We need our headlights polished up. And we need to be able to go forward in confidence to be able to defeat the enemy of our soul. This sin that does so easily, we've got to lay it aside. We're going to have to choose to go above that and beyond that. In 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter and the 13th verse, I'd like to go there briefly. It says, there is no temptation taking you but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Now I want to tell you how the devil works. The devil starts out before you realize it's the devil. Just like your headlights are getting dim, the devil starts out before you ever know that he's really working in the mix. And he begins to introduce things to you, ideas, thoughts, appetites, that although they may come from a wholesome origin of our Creator, he wants to introduce a distorted perspective with the help of the world and its abilities all around us, to the point that he gets us to the place that we realize that we went farther than we ought to go, and now we feel ashamed of something that's in our own life. And when it gets us to that point, he says, you can never raise your head again. You're done. You're doomed. You might as well forget it. You might as well become my servant. The devil will talk to you like that. And I want to tell you, this says, there's no temptation taking you such as is common to man. So if there's anybody here that feels like that you have been tempted with looking on the opposite gender and lusting after them, and the devil is telling you that you are probably the only one. It's obvious that if this was a common thing, that it would be more visible or more public or something like that. You know, I'll tell you how I know he's such a big liar. There is a inordinate, extravagant market to promote that thing out there. So you're not by yourself. This is something that everybody has to contend with. Everybody. And it says here that when we're tempted, he will make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. So I want to end this morning. I'm not ending yet. But I want to end this morning with a message of how you can overcome this. All right? But right now I want us to understand that you're not some exclusive, weak, inferior. Because once he gets the appetite, and once he feeds that, and once he gets you to sampling and biting into this thing, he changes his tactic and makes you feel like you're miserable, incapable, worthless trash. That's what he does. That's the devil. So I'd like to go back to our verse here. And notice he says, "But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman or a man to lust after him or her hath committed adultery with her or him in his heart already." You already did it. Jesus says, you need to get it out of your heart. That's where we can get real victory. That's where we'll be able to rise above this thing. He says in the 29th and the 30th verse, and I've read through this so many times in my life, and I've wondered, was this something disconnected from the thought? I don't believe it is. He said, "If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not the whole body should be cast into hell." I'm going to tell you that you have to be determined to take drastic measures. Plucking out an eye, cutting off a hand. I'm going to tell you, my friend, those are important things to me. And I don't believe it's talking about literally plucking out your eye or cutting off your hand. But I believe it's talking about taking some drastic measures. Drastic measures. And when you're doing something, you know, when the fellows that have went out into outer space on space missions and all of that, I read a little story here recently about someone that went out and changed a battery in the Hubble telescope or something like that. And they trained for months, maybe 2 years, I don't remember. It was a long period of time on how they was going to do this when they got up in space. They put their space suits on, got the tools that they were going to use, and they went through this routine. They knew how many screws it was. They went over and over and over and over this. And you know, when they got up there, they found out that something went haywire. One of the little bolts stripped out or something. It wouldn't come out. Do you know, we have to have a plan in place to rise above these kind of things. If you don't have a plan in place, you're going to fail. You're not going to be able to hold your breath long enough to be victorious in this battle. You know, you might hold your breath long enough for somebody that you don't like to pass out of your line of sight. But you can't hold your breath long enough to get victory over this. I'd like to go to Proverbs, the 6th chapter. And I'd like to look at verses 20 beginning. Proverbs chapter 6. And I want you to know this morning that the thing that I am talking about is pornography. I'm not talking about something that you would necessarily find in a section somewheres that would be under the title of pornography. You know, we have a song in our book that says, "We need each other, brethren." And I'm going to tell you, we're going to gain victory in this. You're going to have to most likely work with somebody. We're going to have to be accountable to one another. All right? We need each other. You young men, I need you. I might not be here before you know it. We need you. We need some men to stand in the gap. You young ladies, we need some mothers in Israel to stand in the gap. And if you're struggling with pornography, you won't be able to do either one. All right? It's important for us to gain real victory in these areas. I'd like to look Proverbs chapter 6, I believe it is, and begin reading in verse 20. It says, "My son, keep my father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou wakest, it shall talk with thee." It's important that we have a plan in place and that we have reminders and we take that law with us wherever we go. It says, "For the commandment is a lamp." Here comes that light again. "And the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange woman." Here again. "It can keep you from the evil man and the flattery of the tongue of the strange man." All right? "Lust not after their beauty." I'll read it that way. "In thine heart. Neither let them take thee with their eyelids." There's a way, if we're not careful, that we can send the signal with our eyes. Lord, help us not to partake of that. He says, "By the means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned?" I want to tell you that unfortunately, there are way too many of us, maybe all of us, have some scars. And all of these are something that we have to deal with. I'm not speaking to you this morning because I'm from some lofty planet. And I can speak to you because I've never been touched with this, because I have. I grew up before cordless phones. I remember that my parents got a cordless phone after I left home. So that'll kind of give you a little time perspective there. But I had a job that I worked at after school. And the enemy will see that we encounter environments that expose us to things we shouldn't be exposed to. All right? I remember going to this job. I would leave from my high school and go over there and have my work clothes with me, and didn't really have a changing room. I went to an old storage room to change my clothes, and in that room, one light bulb in the middle, you couldn't hardly see in there. I don't know, it was dirty and all of that, so I'd gingerly take my school clothes off and try to keep them from getting dirty from all the dust in there, and put my work clothes on and then go about my task there at the job that I had. And would work there in the evening and work there on the weekend sometimes on Saturday. And after I changed my clothes in there a few times, I realized that there was a whole stack of trade magazines there. You know what I mean by trade magazines? If you're an electrician, they'd be about electrical things. If you was a plumber, it was plumbing things. If you was a carpenter, it'd be about maybe trim and cabinets and framing and all that. Well, I was working in a machine shop, and it was about that kind of thing. So, 20-year-old magazine full of dirt. That might be something interesting. Open it up, you know, it's just technical stuff. That's all it was. But that wasn't all that was in the stack. All right? There was things in there that I shouldn't have never seen in my life. And you know, there is something about the intrigue that the enemy wants to distort. The intrigue that the Lord put there so that we would have families. And the enemy comes in and twists things around and puts things in perspectives that will cause us to sin. And there's something about that causes us to become very perceptive, I guess. I don't know what else to say, of where those things might be. And you know, I found more than one in that stack. And you know what ends up happening? If we're not careful, we'll spend more time in the storeroom than we should have. Understand what I'm saying? It says, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? You can't consume pornography without it leaving a scar. Now, I have a physical scar on my ankle that I got one time when I was working. I was taking a bearing off of a shaft, and I had on these lace-up work shoes. Come up kind of on my ankle. You know what I'm talking about, probably. Heavy work shoes, and I had them laced up pretty tight. And I had cut this bearing almost completely through with a cutting torch, and then I took a chisel, and I hit it. I was down on the ground kind of like this. My britches leg was pulled up. My shoe was gapped open at the top. And I hit that thing with my chisel, And when I did, a piece of that red hot metal bounced over and went right down in my shoe between my ankle and my leather shoe. And you ever tried to get a lace-up work boot off with a red hot piece of metal down in your... That's not a very happy situation. So I have this neat little crescent in the side of my ankle that's a scar today, and reminds me, if I'm going to do something like that, make sure that my pants legs are over the top of my shoes. I don't want it to bounce over and go down in that hole. Now, you know, the things that I seen in the storeroom at the place that I worked after school is something that left a scar in my mind. And I'm thankful I can stand before you today and say that I don't remember the details today. But I'm going to tell you, that hasn't always been the case. I have multiple scars from injuries of working and things like that. And I'm going to tell you, when you have a very severe injury and there's a scar, that place is sensitive for a long period of time. I cut my finger off one time. Lord helped it grow back on. But for several years, if I slapped my hand on a table like that, it just sent pain up through my body. And did you know that if you have a scar like this in your mind, it's going to take years of you asking God to erase those things. And you're going to have a plan of putting something else in your head and in your mind's eye. I'm telling you, it's not something to play with. It's not something that you think you can handle. You're not strong enough. You're not big enough. I don't care how big old boy you are. You're not strong enough and big enough. It'll bring you down. It'll destroy you. It'll cause you to have dysfunctional relationships in your marriage. It's not a good thing. So I'm speaking from experience. I'm thankful I wasn't raised in an environment that I was exposed to that on a daily basis. But I can't tell you this morning that I haven't been exposed to it, because I was. And I know what it's like to have some scars. Maybe not scarred like some people, but I know what it's like. And unfortunately, I know that today, I told you about the telephones, because I know today your cell phone that you have has capabilities that the warehouse, that our storeroom that I changed my clothes in, and the wall, the phone that hung on the wall, couldn't do for me. We had about a 14-inch cord, and you stood in the hall to talk on the phone. I couldn't get it that way. But folks, I know the enemy has saturated every means of communication that's out there to where it's accessible to you. And I want to talk about my definition of pornography here and incorporate it with the song that we have of "We Need Each Other, Brethren." It don't have to be classified by the nominal people out there that it's pornographic, okay? Because you'll find some very, very unsettling definitions of that, okay? It's important that parents address this. You may not always perceive everything, but it's important for us as parents to address everything that we do perceive and not let anything go without us investigating. Be very careful about sale flyers. All right? I've said these kind of things to in brothers' meetings before, but I want to make sure that everybody understands. You make sure. What do they put in there? You know, they are more and more provocative with advertisements today. With things that you don't wear on the outside. Than they ever were. Don't leave it laying around, mothers. And don't leave it laying around, fathers. You know, they don't put middle-aged people in those things and then take pictures of them and put them in the sale flyer. They don't do that. They take pictures of athletic people. They take pictures of people that might pose in other situations. I'm being very plain this morning. But I want to make sure you know you don't turn it the wrong way. You understand me? I want to make sure you get the message. You want to see the church of God go moving on, as Brother Donald Sharp's song was? We're going to have to get the basics down and not go smoothing over them. We got to be on target and on track. Don't let it slip under the fence. He said here in Proverbs, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one take hot coals, go on hot coals and his feet not be burned? I'm going to tell you, it's going to leave some hiccups and scars that's not going to be very pretty. And you're going to wish that you'd address some things. You know, one of the probably the worst things that you can do as a parent is not address it and then grieve over a struggle that your child has. It's one of the worst things you can do. I'd like for us to go try to start going towards the end of my thought this morning. I'd like to go to John, the 8th chapter. John the 8th chapter, we have the story of the woman that was caught in the act of adultery, and the scribes and Pharisees brought her to Jesus. And I'm not going to read the story because I know you're well aware of it. It's a story where Jesus was asked, or told, the law says we're supposed to do this. And what do you say? And Jesus stooped down and wrote in the dirt, you remember that, until all of the accusers went away. And when they went away, he looked up at the woman and he said, Where are those that wanted to stone you? And she said, they left. Why did they leave? Why did they leave? Jesus said, if you're without sin, cast the first stone. You know, the Lord wants us without these kind of sins. He wants us clean. He wants us to be able to put the devil in his place. You're going to have to learn what size, how hard the bolt is, which way to turn the thing. We're going to have to stick with the fundamental. You want some real victory, we're going to have to start at ground level. And after Jesus realized that all of her accusers was away, they had things in their life, you see. And after they had left, remember what Jesus said? Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. So I want to tell you this morning, if you've had struggles with this in the past, if you've had struggles with this in your recent history, I want to tell you, the Lord wants to help you to rise above that. The Lord wants you to be victorious. The Lord don't want you to succumb. He doesn't want you to have scars. He wants you to be able to stand with a clear testimony before the people and in the face of the enemy. And you can do this with the help of the Lord. I'd like to turn to Job, read a verse in Job 31. I feel like this is a very important verse for us to get a hold of, and it's part of our plan of victory and how we gain victory. In Job 31 and 1, he says, I got to turn there. I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? My margin says chastity. I made a covenant with my eyes. Men, women, young ladies, young men, this morning, I'm asking you to make a covenant with your eyes. And not only with your eyes, but your thinking process that goes on right behind your eyes. You know, right in here. I want you to make a covenant that when I'm tempted, and you're going to be tempted, and I'm not going to tell you that the devil is going to become extinct, because I don't believe he will. You're going to be tempted. But you're going to have a plan. You're going to have whatever it, if it takes, not literally, but if it takes figuratively plucking out an eye or cutting off a hand, you're going to have something in place that'll help you gain the victory. You can't play around with this thing. He said, I made a covenant with my eyes that I should not, why then should I think upon a maid? Now, there's a difference between a wholesome desire for a spouse and lusting after someone of the opposite gender. There's a vast difference in that. And I believe that God can help you keep your head on your shoulders, so to speak. The Lord can help you keep your appetites and your desires in the proper perspective. The Lord can help you have a real desire for a spouse and not lust after someone of the opposite gender. All right? So here is the things that I would like for you to keep in mind about how to gain victory. Number one is that we acknowledge what it is. We have to acknowledge it for what it is. What did Jesus say? If you lust after, you look on a woman to lust after her, you've done what? Committed adultery. Adultery is sin. You have to acknowledge it for what it is. Number two, we have to make a covenant. I won't do that. I won't think those kind of thoughts. You know, we've got a brother in our congregation that reminds us quite often that there is something about the name of Jesus. There's real power in His name. And when the enemy starts presenting thoughts into your head, appetites that you know are not compatible with holiness, there's something about crying out audibly many times, Lord Jesus, help me. Help me right here. I'm having a struggle. And you don't have to explain anything to Jesus, because He knows what that struggle is. And there's something about crying out and asking Him for mercy and help during those times. But you can't wait until you get to this setting to ask for help. Oh, it's good to ask for help here. And if you want to pray this morning, I believe it's a good time. But you're going to have a plan in place to cry out to Jesus in the times when He puts the temptation there. When you know there ought to be something around here, that fella out there, I know he's got this around here somewhere. Surely it'll be under this stack somewhere. Don't do that. That's the time to say, Lord, help me. And the last thing that you're going to have to do is be accountable. You have to be accountable to the Lord. number one. But you may have to be accountable to somebody to really gain victory. You're going to have to acknowledge. You're going to have to make a covenant. And you're going to have to be accountable. All of these are first off with the Lord. But many times, if the devil has got his tentacles embedded in this area in our life, we're going to have some outside reinforcements. I had a young man in the congregation just recently took on a job that was too big for him, for himself. It was almost too big for all of us. But anyway, he started working on this job. He went to bed on Wednesday night with a roof over his head, and he started tearing the roof off Thursday morning. I mean, all the roof, rafters and everything. And by 9 o'clock, we had it cleared off down to the walls. And we worked over there all day long and up into the night. And we left, we had decking back on it. I'm going to tell you, we was all wore out. And you're going to find you're going to get into some things in life, and this is one of them. Might just be too big for yourself. He told us early on, he says, when I get ready to do my roof, I'm going to need your help. Well, he not only needed our help, but he needed some others too. I want to tell you, I was so thankful to see him with a ridge cap nailed on top of that roof. Dear ones, when we gain victories in these kind of areas, there's going to be a lot of rejoicing. Not because maybe somebody knows all of the particulars, but because they'll see the power of God in your life. And when we see the power of God in your life, because you've got yourself clean from these kind of sin that does so easily beset us, I'm going to tell you, there is a way out of it. You're going to have to acknowledge. You're going to have to make a covenant. And you're going to have to be accountable. But dear ones, there's hope. Jesus said to the woman, go and sin no more. And I'm going to tell you this morning, with the help of God, you can go from this place and not fall prey to this again.